Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And at this point, I don't even think I'd mentioned it on the podcast much with what I struggled with until that chat with Alfie that I mentioned. I couldn't speak about this. It was like a secret, really. If I'd found it at, like, say, in the morning, I'd just go straight to the doctors. You don't have that worry. You don't have that trauma. Yeah. But because I had it all through the night, it really seeped in, and we turned the camera off. Gervais left, and he just looked at me and he just went, fucking hell, mate, give me a hug. You smashed it. So this guy came over to me. He's like, who fucking gave you your ticket? And I was just like, got out of my pocket. I went, yeah, mate. And he went, you're a plastic. You're a fucking plastic. Some of my opinions were insane.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember having those opinions, but I think I was just trying to be like an edgy little teenager and stuff. Like, I'll cuss football Twitter up.
You've been loving football Twitter recently.
Yeah, I don't care.
I do care. I have not got the head to take abuse. Please don't come at me.
I live for it. Bring it on.
Yes, people, welcome to the Football and Feelings podcast. I'm your host, Liam. I'm here with our guest for today. Don't really need to introduce him because you've clicked on this because his name's in the title. You're not here for me. That's fine. But I'm going to go with top tier podcaster.
Ooh.
It's the lovely Jack, mate. How are you doing? I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm here for you, mate.
Ah, oh, thank you. Stop it. Blushing.
I appreciate you booking a studio that's a 6 minute drive from mine as well. So it's very handy.
It's fine. I had loads of questions down for today. Then you did your honest interview. So it's back to the drawing board for me.
Oh, really?
I answered a few of them. But still, we move. We can go over it again, mate. If you want, we'll do the exact same episode.
Just rip that off my channel and re-upload it if you want.
How are you feeling now with the tables being turned? You're in the hot seat for this one on the other side of the interview. How's that feel?
It's quite nice. It's relaxing because obviously when you're asking the questions, you'll know this, like, the guest will be answering, but you'll be too stressed about how to make it seamlessly segue into the next one. Yeah. And I don't have to worry about that today.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it, mate.
It is stressful, you're right. But it's great to pull you out of Spotify HQ today.
Yeah.
I know you're normally probably in Joe Rogan's little weird cave that he's got. Yeah, but thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. You're a West Ham fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why is that? That's because your dad is a fan?
Yeah, like most people, like one of the parents is a fan. My dad was a fan. So I was like 2 months old and he put a West Ham beanie on my head.
Mm.
And from that moment, I didn't really have a choice. I mean, I always say he's the only West Ham fan in the country that's a Glory Hunter fan because he supported QPR, right. I think, until he was 10. And then West Ham won the FA Cup against Arsenal, actually. Trevor Brook and Ivan Header. And then he switched like that. Yeah. So
he thought they're going places, this team.
Turns out they weren't. So I'm stuck with all the pain and misery.
How's your relationship with the club at the moment? Have you been much in recent years?
Oh, God.
Strange time, isn't it?
It is a strange time, kind of like a traditional transitional period that just so happens to be lasting about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And West Ham fans don't like me. I don't particularly like a lot of them. I'm not going to group them all together because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But the ones that I've met, especially at the ground, didn't like me. Said this before on my podcast. I don't know if you've heard this story, but first year we were at London Stadium, I became fairly good friends with a lot of people at the club and stuff like that. And EA Sports gave me a season ticket and they gave me a plus one. So I gave it to my dad. And that was one of the proudest moments of my life. So like all the stuff I've done on YouTube, it was kind of like you couldn't compare it to the moment I gave my dad a season ticket. And then we turned up, ground's a bit naff, miles away from the stands are miles away from the ground and whatnot. But I was like, well, we'll make the most of it. And we'd just come off the back of that brilliant season, the farewell Berlin season, where we finished seventh. We had Dimitri Payet and everything was going well. So we kind of took that positive energy into that, into the next season. First one at London Stadium, as I say. And first few weeks, like, we started losing. And then a couple of West Ham fans come over to me, like the most If you had to draw a picture of a West Ham fan, you would draw this man, right? Yeah. Basically, lazy eyes, skinheads, like probably had a swastika tattoos. I'm only joking. A West Ham fan's going to give me shit regardless, so I may as well play up to it.
I was going to tread lightly on this episode, but I mean, if they would aim all of the abuse,
just
that side.
Take it. Yeah, I've had years of it. And he come up to me and he was like, "Mate, who's?" Because I didn't know this. I thought we were just. Well, we just sat in the normal stand, but I think there was like a tiny little commercial segment or something.
Right. And that's where your season ticket is.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Like, I literally didn't know. It's just like you've got the steps, then one side is just like the fans that have bought the tickets, and then one where we've been given it. So this guy came over to me, he's like, "Who fucking gave you your ticket?" I was just like, got it out of my pocket. I went, "EA, mate." And he went, "You're a plastic. You're a fucking plastic." And I was like, "Jesus." Because I was under the impression, we're all supporting the same team here, mate. Like, why am I getting... And another thing, he's probably from Newham, round the corner. Yeah. I'm coming from Norwich every other week. Do you know what I mean? So, and like, usually I'm hungover. Usually I want to bin it off. And yeah, so from that moment on, like, he was giving me shit all season. Then a few weeks from the end, my dad just turned around and they had it out. No, they didn't have a fight, but like, they had a heated conversation. So from that moment on, I was kind of like, not really for me. Haven't really been back that often. And now I'm an armchair fan because of... them twats in the stadium.
I can't blame you. And I know a few West Ham fans who really feel like they don't fit in with that fan culture and they've stopped going.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was going to tread lightly around this topic. They've heard things at the ground and they've thought, that is not me. I don't want to be associated with some of the things they were hearing.
Yeah.
And that's similar to what Spencer was saying, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When he said that he's got people coming up to him at an away game that he's travelled to Europe to watch and they're still giving him grief.
Yeah, I don't get it. I genuinely thought, because that was the first season, as I say, that I'd ever had a season ticket. The only other times I'd been were like sporadic one-off games here and there. So I thought, especially having a season ticket, you get that family vibe.
Yeah.
No, not down at the London Stadium. So I think that I'll leave that guy to his sort of like jelly deals and mash or whatever they eat, and I'll just sit at home and watch it. And now I will be a plastic because they've ruined that experience for me.
Yeah.
So I still love West Ham to my core, that the team, but the fans, I'm not arsed.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, can't blame you at all there. There's always been a very clear and pretty accurate, I think, view of your stereotypical West Ham fan. Like you said, you could draw them quite easily. What about on the other side of away from the fans, how are you feeling with the current board situation? Do you disagree and distance yourself from that, or where are you at with it?
It's weird because if West Ham fans watching this are going to hate me even more now because I'm quite pally with Jack Sullivan. So the David Sullivan's the guy that owns West Ham, and that's his younger son. I think Jack's got a proper good head on his shoulders. He's now the chairman of the ladies team and stuff, and he's taken that from strength to strength. But I'm also not one to hold back and to bite my tongue. So I think it's time for them to fucking sell up now. Like, I hope that doesn't ruin any friendship I've got with Jack, but I'm an honest guy. Like, as I just said, I've got nothing but positive to say about Jack. I think the owners took over with the best intentions, right? When they said they were going to sell us a dream and delivered a nightmare. Like, they obviously didn't say delivered a nightmare, but when they said they were going to sell us a dream, I think they genuinely believed they would. I think they were like, this stadium's going to take us to the next level.
On paper, it sort of looked like it could as well.
And they have spent money. They have. This is a thing that a lot of fans seem to forget. Like, I think football fans in general forget when they've spent a lot of money, but just perhaps on the wrong signings. I don't know football well enough to know who made those decisions. Director of football, chairman. I don't know how much Sullivan has to do with that. But I just think it is time to sell up now, because I don't think a lot of the... Have you seen that video that went viral on Twitter of all the times he's contradicted himself? Like, Sullivan said something and he contradicted
it. I can imagine it, though.
Yeah, he's talking about some other football club. I can't remember who it is. I think it might have been Cardiff the year when they went from red to blue or blue to red. Or do you remember that? David Sullivan was sat there and he was like, that's like us renaming our team West Ham London. And then a year later, our badge had London on the bottom of it. Just, what are you going on about, mate? It's just, it is literally a circus. And I mean, like, selling Dean Garner to West Brom recently and the fact you've got all the players coming out and going,
Awful from an outside point of view, another fan looking into that club.
Yeah.
It looked like there was a disaster there.
100%. So I think it is time to to sell up and move on now.
Mm-hmm. Let's focus on your football career now. I saw you and Alfie were looking for a team. Can you break the news? Have you signed for anyone?
No, we haven't got a team yet. The last team we played for was a team called East Tuddenham.
Right.
Fairly local to here, about 10 miles out in the countryside, proper like Norfolk boys. And we were shit, mate. Like, we were lowest league you can be. I don't know how the football pyramid works. Spencer's tried to tell me a few times. Mm-hmm. I still can't grasp it. We were the bottom league, bottom team, turning up and just getting dicked 10, 12 nil every week. So I'm not selling myself well here, but any team that wants me and Alfie, we will come and play, because I just want to play football, mate. Yeah,
I'll run some stats on screen now of their latest games. What sort of player are you?
I am like a holding midfielder.
Okay, yeah, you've got the presence.
Yeah, yeah. So I break the play up. I'm not great, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not great. In that team, I think I stood out a bit just because, okay, they were a bit dog shit.
Okay.
But I can spray a ball, mm-hmm, so I can ping a pass. That's my only thing. And Alfie's a bit of a nippy winger for us, but he wants to play more sort of like fullback now. So there you go. That's my CV.
Well, if you ever make the move to Colchester, I know a team that I can get you involved in. No problem at all.
I'll debate it.
Or are you waiting to get the hashtag call up? Really? they've got a few teams though now, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a few teams, yeah. Reserve team, main team, women's team now. Mate, I wouldn't get anywhere near it. I wouldn't have a sniff.
Yeah, well, you're an ultra though. You prefer watching that. Yeah, it's incredible. I really want to go to a game.
Yeah.
It's class.
Yeah, no, it is good, mate. It's good. I'm not going to pretend that I've been to loads. Mm. Like, first game I went to was there. Second FA Cup game, preliminary one, then they won on penos. Then I went again, they won on penos, went to a league game. So I've been to three games.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think as well, why I love that so much is because my last experience of going to live football was that West Ham experience that I mentioned. So when there's a lot of like traditionalists who don't like the hashtag setup, they don't like the name, they don't like what they're about. And I just think it's quite ignorant. It's quite ignorant because when you're down there and you actually see like... They say they're a YouTube team. None of the players are YouTubers.
Yeah.
Not one. You have a few now, like Lee Hursett and stuff, who stream on Twitch. But why wouldn't you if you can make a few extra pennies? Like, anyone out there would do it. So I fully believe in what them guys are doing and fully back it. And as I say, haven't been there the last few weeks. It's a proper family feel. Like, it's a proper family feel. Like, they won like the second preliminary round or something, which... In the bigger scheme of things, it's not a huge game, but for a club like that, there was everyone stayed behind for about an hour just chanting all the players' names. Like, it was lovely. I don't know how often that happens at non-league. That might happen a lot. I don't know, but I'm fully bought in.
Yeah.
Not even to hashtag now, but to non-league.
Yeah. Like, Do you think maybe like lockdown accelerated that love as well, because there was no live football to see?
Yeah.
Now people have got somewhere to go. They can have a beer. They can watch some football.
Yeah.
I feel like that love has been, there's a catalyst there for it.
Yeah, 100%, mate. 100%.
You've spoken before about your relationship with fitness and mental wellness and how quite often for a lot of people that goes hand in hand. Is that still the case for you? Do you notice those benefits when you keep yourself fit?
Yeah. Oh, mate, fitness is the best medicine ever, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, 100%. Like,
I thought laughter was the best medicine.
Yeah. Fitness and laughter, joint top. Yeah, no, 100%. I think anytime I've had a little dip in the old mental health, like just going to the gym, and for me, it's not so much weights, it's more cardio, like to get a runner's high at the end of like completing a run. Like during lockdown, I think like a lot of people, I hit a bit of a dip in the old mental health and stuff, and went running pretty much every day, completed two half marathons, and the feeling I got after those two half marathons just made me completely forget about like the last month that I'd had, like struggling to get out of bed in the mornings and whatnot. So I think, yeah, if there's anyone out there struggling with mental health, and who perhaps there might be some people who have never really gone running, who it's never really their thing, I'd say like you might hear of people online or creators you follow or any kind of like athletes you follow that are going out doing 5, 10, 20K. Don't do, just get out and do 1K, get out and do 2K and see how you feel after that. And another thing for me is running in the rain.
Like, you like that?
I love it, mate. I love it so much. Like last Tuesday, it was pissing down in the middle of Norwich, and I was like editing at home, and I was looking out the window, and I was like feeling a bit shit, and I was like, I just need to get out. So at lunchtime, I just went and did a quick 5K in the rain, and I came back, and I just felt so revitalized. Like it's the best feeling. Do you run?
No, at the moment, I've got a bad ankle. I tore a ligament.
Oh shit!
So I haven't been able to play football, and that has like I was playing football a lot at home and I was going along to watch a few local teams and not being able to do that, like I got into a real rut with it. There was 2 weeks where I couldn't walk at all. Like I was just sat there with my leg elevated. And when you sort of hear about those things from a professional standpoint, you think of players out for a few months. I'm not saying my experience is similar, but I didn't realize how much that would affect me. It was awful. Like I was just laying in bed thinking like, what is the point? Like I'm going to wake up tomorrow, not be able to do anything. Wake up the next day, not be able to do anything. Even if I'm not playing, even if I can't run, like now I can walk. I quite like a country walk. I'm a bit old before my times. And that being around nature, I've loved the drive into Norwich here because there's so much green. And it's incredible. Little things like that. I used to sort of not resent. I just thought it didn't work as well as it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be honest.
Yeah, you take it for granted a bit, don't you?
100%.
When you can't do it,
100%.
I sort of heard Theo Baker, he got really upset on his waffling podcast that he does because he got an injury and then couldn't do anything for a while. And there is instantly, there is a part of you that goes, does it really make you that upset? But then when lockdown hits, and as I say, and for a while I was just thinking I couldn't even get out, and then... Yeah, it changes everything.
Yeah, those little things that are taken away from you.
100%.
On your content at the moment, like you've been putting out an awful lot. It looks like you're on a roll, being very productive. Obviously, big news with the Spotify deal as well. Congratulations.
Thank you, mate.
Well deserved. You can see just from the outside, you can see how much work you put into it. But alongside that, how has your headspace been? Because for me, I was saying to Johnny behind the camera here, when things are going well for me, I feel there's something awful around the corner.
Yeah.
That's just how my mind works. No, not everyone gets that. But how's your headspace been with that?
Yeah, good. I mean, it was coming into this year, we didn't know what was around the corner. Like we didn't know COVID was just around the corner. But I had a bit of a shit year last year where nothing really bad happened in my life, but just mental health took over. And just had a bit of a shit year and I wasn't very productive. I spent too many hours in the pub and I was just wasting my weekends. That would sort of bleed into Monday and Tuesday. And I just wasn't as productive as I could have been. So when January hit this year, I was like, I made a conscious decision to go, okay, whether or not I'm up for doing the main channel, the podcast, I'm going to just smash it. And that's what I did. So it's like it helps as well because I have to go to London. So every single Thursday we book it in. I've never really been somebody that can have a structure. Mm-hmm. So I've been very, very lucky in my life that I've always been able to work for myself and do YouTube when I want, wake up when I want, go to bed when I want. There's little luxuries that I did take for granted for a long time.
But
having a structure, having a Thursday, booking that out, it does help. It does help when perhaps your head isn't in the right space. I do need that little bit of I've got to go tomorrow. And I'll tell you what else has helped me is at the start of the year, I brought Fiona, my fiance, on full time. Brought Alfie on part-time. When you have people that actually rely on you, you can't just bin it off for a month or so. So that really helped. And then I'm kind of I'm kind of now sort of getting the rewards from it now, what with the Spotify thing. So I can't really remember what your question was.
Just sort of how's your headspace been really?
Right, I think it's all sort of that. It's all every little thing is helping the other things, if that makes sense. Getting them on has helped me be more productive to schedule. So yeah, right now it's all good, mate. It's all good. And even when I'm not feeling productive enough to do the main channel or driven enough, I know I still have to do that side project, which has very much become a main project now anyway. Happy days.
I'll come back onto that. I want to talk about the dynamic you've got there working with friends and Fiona and the passion that you've clearly got on the podcast. But sticking on the mental health theme, you've spoken about having health anxiety and OCD in the past. Do you know what sort of triggers these things at the moment? Do you know? I'm sort of just interested to hear what causes these reactions and how they sort of play out in your mind, and if you're better at dealing with it now.
I'm better at dealing with it, but I still have just as many kind of triggers as ever. It's just I think, I don't know if it's with age or Alfie's helped me a lot because. Before I met Alfie. A lot of people think we've been mates for years. I met him about a year and a month ago, so it's not long at all. And then we went on a little trip to Liverpool for Halloween. And at this point, I don't even think I'd mentioned it on the podcast much with what I struggled with, with the OCD and stuff. And then we had a long journey back. Fiona fell asleep in the back of the car. Alfie was in the front. Barely knew him at the time. And we just had a long, long chat. And he opened up about his OCD. And I didn't really open up about mine in detail, but I was kind of thinking, whoa, fuck, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's so similar to me. So from that moment, I was like, he told me how much it helped him talking about his problems. Mm. So I then actively started to talk about mine. And even though, as I just said, I still get just as many triggers, I feel like I can deal with them a lot more now. So I have all these different I explained this to Fiona the other day, but with the OCD, it can be 100 little things at once. So it might be, I might go for a period of time where I can't have that book there. It needs to be on the table fully. There can't be any of it over. But like I had one recently, and I've had it for years, where I can't put my phone off at night unless it's on a round number. So if it, so it has to be like 1 a.m. or 1:15 or 1:30, 1:45. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of weeks ago, I thought, right, I can't just... And to anyone who doesn't have OCD, this sounds like probably a bit crazy. Like,
I understand it. But like the only way I can sort of relate to that is like when people, do they just sort of say it in a blasé fashion? It's like, oh, I can't have the volume on an even
right,
number.
Yeah,
but that's
yeah.
like the go-to one that everyone seems to use.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this one's quite a go-to as well. But like, so Fiona, like she often says like, oh, I'm a bit OCD about that. And then she goes, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say it like that. And it's like, I don't give a shit, because that is an easy way people can explain how they feel about certain things.
Yeah.
Like, it's more probably superstition than anything when people say I can't have that on like the volume on a certain number. I have loads of little things like that, but then I also have big things that proper like eat at me and mm-hmm. stuff, like having to walk in and out of a room 5-10 times certain yeah. amount. But going back to the time thing, in my head I was like, right, I know I can't stop doing this, but it's pissing me off, because if I'm in bed and I'm tired and it's 1:01, I've got to wait 14 minutes before I can turn my phone off and I'm shattered. So I'm just like, oh, it's annoying. So what I trained myself to do was to go, okay, well, 1:05 is a nice round number. I'll go to 1:05. And then I got to 1:05, turned it off. And at first you feel all this kind of like anxiety. It's like, I've got to look at my phone again. It might be 1:15. Mm. But instead of just completely trying to stop it, I went for that other route of going 1:05 is okay. And now I don't have it at all. So I'll look and it'll be 1:04 and I'll go, right, just get it off. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's like step by step, just trying to find an easier way out of that OCD.
So you're sort of trying to change you want to be controlling your brain in that aspect rather than at the moment, or it's getting to that point where you're controlling it.
I want to make the rules.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Which, yeah.
That's interesting to hear, because I don't experience OCD. I experience anxiety. So it's a very, very different thing, but sometimes they sort of interchange. Mm-hmm. Have you ever, I know Joe Weller asked you about this on your podcast, but do you think you would ever get professional help or see like a therapist or psychologist about that sort of thing?
It's weird, because I've had a lot of heated debates with a lot of my friends when I've opened up about this. And this is the most frustrating thing, because for me, with my health anxiety, so for anyone who doesn't know, I have like really bad health anxiety, because I found a lump on my testicles when I was younger. And being like, I can't even remember, maybe 12, 13, something like that. I found it at nighttime. So I had to, and I think I had to wait all night, shitting myself, like, what is this? What is this? And I think that night was the worst night of my life, because if I'd found it at like, say, in the morning, I'd just go straight to the doctors. You don't have that worry. You don't have that trauma.
Yeah.
But because I had it all through the night, it really seeped in. Mm-hmm. Sorry, what was your question?
Have you considered like getting help for it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And because I had that whole night of worrying about going to the doctors, I now have a phobia of going to the doctors. So when it comes to speaking to a therapist and stuff, I explained it to my friend the other night, it's like the shutters have just come down.
Yeah.
So this sounds crazy. I hope I'm not being inconsiderate when I say crazy. I just don't
I know
like,
what you mean.
Yeah. 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 But I have no other way to explain it, really. But if somebody said to me tomorrow, like my worst fear, and they were like, yeah, you are ill, like you've got cancer. If you go to the hospital, it can be sorted. I wouldn't go because I physically couldn't go. And it's not, you could sit here now and tell me, well, just go, mate. But I can't. It's like a mental block. It's a mental block. And the only way to unlock that is to see a therapist, but it's a similar block for me. Yeah. So it's all sort of mashed up in my head. What I'm doing now, which really helps now, is stuff like this, having this talk, speaking to Joe Weller, speaking to Fiona. They're my therapy sessions. Mm-hmm. So I hope if I keep doing enough of them, it will then help me unlock that other bit where I can actually speak to a professional about it.
Well, I hope that you will continue making progress there, because that's something that I'm quite passionate about, is people going to get professional help for mental health problems. Because for a while there was a stigma. I feel like that stigma is broken down, or I'm in just a better place with it now. But if you have a bad back, you go to a chiropractor. If you're sick, you go to a doctor. A lot of people don't understand that that translates into your head. It's mental fitness that you have to focus on. Okay, so that's good. I'm glad that I've got you on, and you feel like this is helping you sort of get a little bit closer.
Yeah, that literally it was like until that chat with Alfie that I mentioned, I couldn't speak about this. It was like a secret, really, just a big secret. Now I don't care. So although I know I'm not ready to take it to that next level, just being able to chat about it. Like, I've only met you today, but I'm not ashamed of anything. Like, I can just talk about it. And I hope, like, just by us talking about it, there'll be people out there that might suffer from similar things. And talking about it is step one, right? So if you can do that, then hopefully you can move on to those other levels.
Exactly. But it's not like it's unprecedented. Like, you have got a trigger there, like something happened to you. So it's, as always relates to a life experience. Mm-hmm. And it is quite hard to, it'll be easy for me to sit here and trivialize it and say, mate, just go see a therapist. I understand that's a very difficult thing to do. Something I've done in the past, and there is a barrier there, and I was really nervous about it. The only way I could do it was just by fucking smashing through that barrier.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't have what you're going through, so everyone's different.
I'm sure one day I will have that, but it's just about chipping at that wall until I can feel strong enough to break through that thing. Yeah.
Okay. So if you were to imagine in 5-10 years time, do you think you would be getting help? How, if you imagine yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, I think so. Because if 13 months ago, if you'd have asked me if I'd be sat here talking about it on a podcast, I'd have said no. Yeah, and I'm doing that now. And I don't know, like, I've heard a lot of people say, one of my cousin's friends suffers from health anxiety. So I spoke to him a little bit. He said it really changed. He cared more about himself in terms of going to the doctors, going to the hospital once he had a kid. Because he had something else to, like, oh, I need to survive for this person. And then you kind of project that onto someone else. I think that might help me. Now, I'm not going to just have a kid in the hope that it helps my mental health. I'll have a kid when I'm ready to have a kid. But I think that might be a byproduct of having a kid, that I then can do that. But we'll have to wait and see.
Of course. What about when it comes to like your podcast, or like meeting the guests that you've got, or even like meeting like fans, if they come up to you and speak about your work, does that make you anxious, or are you quite comfortable with that now?
Yeah, I'm not really an anxious person in that respect. So all of my OCDs, all of my anxiety is all kind of like internal about my own health and stuff. So Fiona suffers from like anxiety and stuff like that. And I'll be completely honest. And I've said it again on my podcast. I'm not proud of this. I was very ignorant to what anxiety was. Five, 6 years ago, before I met her, I thought, oh, we all get a bit nervous. Like, I was like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
a lot of people have that opinion, though. It's not just you, yeah.
Yeah, and she completely opened my eyes to what anxiety actually is and stuff. Because I remember one year she came to Summer in the City, and I was on the stage doing a talk. She was in the front row, and I mentioned her, and she stood up and went, hey, and waved. And then a couple of days later, we met one fan in the street, and she was like really like all over the place. And I was like, how can you go from that to a room of people to that? And she was like, well, it doesn't matter when it happens. It just happens. So that really opened my eyes to it. But to answer your question about whether or not I get anxious about the guests and that, no, I'm really lucky that I don't. But yeah, I get, I mean, so did you say you suffer from anxiety?
The last few years I've noticed that I get very socially anxious, to the extent of like doing this podcast is perfect for me because I can plan what I'm going to say and how it transitions. It got to the point where I'd be meeting my closest friends in the pub, and in my phone I'd have like 6 or 7 conversation topics because I was so scared of awkward silences. Those awkward silences to me felt 10 times longer. They felt like, I would think everyone's staring at me. Everyone wants me to say something.
Right.
But now I'm so much more comfortable with those awkward silences.
Yeah.
But that took me a long time. That took me a long time to adjust. And that anxiety led to some depressive episodes, I'd say. I'm in a much better place with it now. And I appreciate how social interaction, if I don't have that for a week, I go fucking mad.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be around people. I need to be doing stuff like this. I need to hear about other people's experiences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I understand social anxiety. It's a hard thing to explain to someone who doesn't experience it, because it's just on the face of it, it does feel just like nerves, but to another level, like my legs would be shaking.
Right.
Yeah. Strange, but I'm in a much better place with it now. I think this podcast has helped.
Yeah, sweet, man.
Yeah. What about being in your position? You've got some followers, you've got a lot of subscribers. Have you ever felt pressure to be a role model, or can you not stop that? Do you need to keep that away? Otherwise it affects your decision making.
Yeah, I
know it's not in your content to be a role model. Yeah, technically.
It's never been something that I've that I've wanted to achieve or anything. Yeah. Like I've never really taken it that serious, to be honest. So for example, like with my tweets and especially with the kind of content that I do, which I don't censor at all, weird analogy, but or comparison, I should say, is that my fiance's mum, who's her family are very PG, so to speak, Christian background and stuff, whereas my mum and dad are just council of state, don't give a shit sort of thing. And her mum, when she found out what I did, I was a bit don't tell her the links and that, don't give her the URLs. We went on her laptop once and she bookmarked my Twitter page. So she reads my tweets.
Okay.
And I'm actually I tweet I think what everyone does, what I think people are going to find funny. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some of the stuff I tweet, I wouldn't even say to my mates. So I'll be a bit edgy with the tweets to try and get a reaction out of people. Like I'll cuss football Twitter up.
Loving football Twitter recently.
Yeah, I don't care.
I do care. I have not got the head to take abuse. Please don't come at me.
I live for it. Bring it on. A Galo season, whatever your fucking name is.
Signing Sancho.
Sancho season. Where's he? Where is he? He's in Dortmund. So I can't because I know she'll be reading my tweets. I have to block it out because otherwise I couldn't tweet it, because I'm going around there and I'm thanks for dinner, this is lovely, and then I'm going, oh, you fucking little pussy, I can't focus on it. So that leads me back to answer your question about being a role model. I just have to assume that the people that are watching me are similar characters to me, because if I knew there was sometimes I'll be out in Norwich or whatever, and some parent will come over and go, "Is all right if my kid has a picture?" And I'll go, "Yeah, no worries." And I'll look, and it'll be a 13-year-old kid. I'm "What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing here?"
And really monitor what they're on, please, because if they're coming and watching me call Alfie Days a cunt every week, that is not good. That is not good. So no, I'm not a role model.
Fair enough. Do you still? You said this on your honest interview, that one time you walked into college and you saw people watching your video and your heart sunk and you felt insecure about it at the time.
Yeah,
understandable. I'll be the same. Do you still feel like that now? Do you still feel ever insecure about your work when it spills into the real world? If that makes sense.
No, not really, because I'm so lucky that I've had so much success with it now that it doesn't. And because so many people do YouTube now, it's not really that social stigma. There's not that stigma that
people are a different person sometimes online. People don't care
for
anymore.
Sure. So I mean, it's the difference between I weren't really getting many views, and I'd not really structured my videos. I didn't really know what I was doing, and so when I was going into school and they were watching it, it was just it's cringe content. Now I'm very confident with what I do. It's become my job. So if anyone sees it, it's just I believe in the content. So I'm not sort of embarrassed by it. But then again, who doesn't look at their old content and think it's cringe? Do you know what I mean? I think it's a good thing because it shows
you delete
progression.
Many videos.
I do delete a lot of videos. Okay, yeah, mainly just because I've said mental things. If I don't delete them, I will be deleted from the internet. Sometimes I'll randomly click on an old video. I'll go on what's the oldest one that's up on my channel that's still live? Click on that one. Watch it halfway through. I've said something. I'm that's mental. I'll delete that instantly. Some of my opinions were insane. And I can't even remember having those opinions, but I think I was just trying to be an edgy little teenager and stuff. So yeah, I delete a lot of videos.
Yeah, I deleted a Twitter account once for that reason. I won't say this on air, I'll tell you after. some weird stuff. Okay, let's move on to your work then. What can we expect for a Spotify exclusive Happy Hour in the future?
Oh God, just more of the same shit, really.
Yeah, more of these.
Which, huh?
More of these.
Yeah, yeah. When's this going out?
Next week at some point, it's probably okay. Friday.
So I'm in the process of doing another happy hour week, which is just six episodes, Halloween based, six different YouTube guests on the run up to Halloween. Halloween's on a Saturday, so Monday to Saturday.
Can I come on? Or?
You can come on, yeah. Yeah, you can come and speak about mental health and pumpkins, Halloween special. But whether or not that happens or not is yet to be seen, just because sometimes YouTubers let you down. Clip that out.
You've said quite often that the main channel content you make it's not your focus anymore, it's not what you're as passionate about. But do you think that that you'll sort of reshift that model and maybe you'll get that balance back of it being 50-50, like making your main channel content more sort of just, I don't know, more you, I suppose, or do you think you'll still keep that divide of focusing on the podcast?
I will keep doing the main channel as long as there's a large enough group that want to see it. Because the only reason that I wouldn't completely bin it off is because that's what people have subscribed for, and I'm still getting the views. If the views dramatically drop off, I'll probably bin it off. Like right now, my two goals in life are to do the podcast, which I'm doing, and to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
So the main channel helps me write jokes and structure jokes and stuff, but do I really want to sit there and watch Bryce Hall videos for 2 weeks to come up with a commentary video? I don't care about him, and ultimately I don't care what he's doing. So I don't think I'll change the content. For example, like, I've got a video coming out today on the day of we're recording this, about Touch the Light, some guy called Carmi, and I enjoyed making that one, but just purely because with Bryce Hall, I always use that as an example. That's a bill payer, because I'm like, right, we'll get it done. That'll pay the bills because there's nothing else going on. When somebody's done something shit that's so mad, I love it because it's like the comedy almost writes itself. If I'm just going, Bryce Hall threw a party during COVID, obviously I don't condone that. That's not great, but it's just like, really that asked about it. Do you know what I mean?
So because you want to do stand-up comedy, do you enjoy the writing part of those? Oh, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what's made the whole process so much longer for me now, because like people like I'm Alex and George Mimulus and stuff, and I'm not putting myself above them in any level whatsoever. Yeah. But what they do when they do a reaction video or commentary video is they've heard about this video, say Touch the Lights, Wave House, TikTok shit. They'll play it, and they'll stop, and then they'll just give their comment. Whereas I write I will literally clip out all the bits I want to use, and I will analyze it, and I will write paragraphs and paragraphs, pages and pages and pages, just because I can write a whole page and I'll find one little bit of it funny. But then I know that's okay, that's good. I can move on.
Up to that,
So the process of over the years of how long it takes me to make a reaction video has like grown tenfold. Like I could get one out in a day, and now it takes me about 5 days, like 2 days scripting, an hour filming, and then 3 or 4 days editing. So I've kind of made a rod for my own back in that respect.
Yeah, I think that's partly why I don't like the term YouTuber, because I feel like that's a term people who don't really understand it say, and they think it's he just puts a bloody camera on, doesn't he? Just snaps it on and he just waffles to the camera.
Yeah.
But people don't now. People understand the production value in some of these YouTube videos is insane. But that's why I really enjoy your videos. I really enjoy people like Stephen Tries. Most of the YouTubers I enjoy have a podcast. So I don't know if there's anything in that, but just because you see a different side to them.
Yeah, mate. I love podcasts, mate. They're completely different to YouTube videos, aren't they? But then there's some, like, it's weird because I love Stephen Tries. I love his videos, but I'm not really that into his podcast. I don't really know.
It's all orientated around his mates, though, isn't it?
I think it's kind of what kind of character you are, whether or not a podcast can work. Because I'll watch some of the Sidemen videos, but I'm not that into like Mini Minutes podcasts and stuff like that. But what other pods do you listen to?
Big fan of True Geordie's podcast, obviously. Get some big guests. Yours, of course. I'm a big fan of Ellis James and John Robbins. I don't know if you know them. BBC, they're BBC. They're two comedians.
Yeah, was Ellis, did he do something with Josh Widdicombe at some point?
He has done, he was in a sitcom with him. Yeah, he was in Josh Widdicombe's sitcom.
Yeah.
And John Robbins is from, he has a YouTube channel now, Bad Golf. Done a video with Seb recently.
Oh, okay.
Big into that. I quite like I don't really like sport podcasts, so it's weird that I've set one up, sort of sport orientated. Some mental health stuff as well. I like it. There's one of the main motivations for me starting this podcast, I listened to an American one called The Hilarious World of Depression. And I really liked how people could talk about mental health and then they could move on to such funny topics so easily.
Yeah.
Like that's what we've done here. We've spoken about your mental health, my mental health, but then it's not that serious. Mm-hmm. Like I want it to be lighthearted. I want it to be lovely. I want it to be deep and meaningful, but like it doesn't need to be like so serious all the time.
No,
I wouldn't
mate.
Be able to do it. It would depress me.
Yeah. And this is the thing. It's already so depressing. As you say, it's already so depressing that you need to make light of it. Mm. Like as Gervais always says, like a joke about a bad thing is not as bad as the bad thing. Like, Daniel Sloss is a great comedian who tackles really good, this kind of thing. He has a Netflix special called Dark. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't.
But he talks about he and here's a spoiler. So if you don't want a spoiler, skip this bit. But his whole show is about his young sister, who I believe has cerebral palsy. It may be something else, but it wasn't good, basically, whatever it was. And he just rinses her for the whole show. And there's times where like the audience will be like, oh, and he's like, it's my sister. And at the end of the show, you find out that she actually passed away like years ago. And that's his way of coping with it. Like he said that she would laugh at these stuff and you need to make light of the shit things to make them less shit. Stevie, one of my best mates in the whole wide world, co-host of my podcast. He's on it all the time, but he came out and spoke about a neighbour. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, but I burst into tears actually watching that.
Mate, it was hard to listen to. It was hard. A neighbour basically was a paedophile. He had a paedophile neighbour that made him do things when he was a kid. And it's a hard watch and he speaks about it and it was a traumatic part of his life. You can bet your fucking bottom dollar that when it was me and him in a room, I was making jokes about it. Yeah. I was cussing him up for it because I'd expect him to do that with my deepest insecurities because they're not taboo when you're around your mates. If I have a mate that feels like they can't joke about a certain element of my life, are you really that close to me?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If Stevie ever thought for a second that I meant any kind of hurt from those words, then he doesn't know me well enough. But he knows me. I'm making light of that. I'm making him laugh. Therefore, I've taken that terrible thing and made it less terrible in a way. So am I a savior, Stevie? I don't know. Possibly.
I've always said that, to be fair. Like there is definitely a place for the arm around the shoulder technique. I'm just past that. Like doesn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. If I'm not in a good place mentally, I want to be with my mates and I want them to take the piss out of me.
Yeah, yeah.
I just get more out of it. I feel like there's a sense of normality in it.
Mm.
I just can't do it. It can't be serious all the time. But
no.
I do, on this podcast, I do sort of judge the tone of the guests. Like I've had some really deep episodes, which there hasn't been much joking and messing around because it's just not the place for it. You must find that on yours all the time.
Oh, mate, you have to read the room. To read the room. And also, if something that terrible happened to you and you told me that now, I wouldn't come out with that joke because we're not as close. So you need to, there is literally a line and you need to judge it. Like, so for example, I've made some race jokes to Alfie because he's one of my best mates and he'll do the same to me. I would never do that to anyone else and I would not do them in a public setting and run the risk of offending anyone else. When I do these jokes, they're not things I believe in either. I'm doing it to get a reaction out of one of my best pals. Do you know what I mean? So you have to judge everything and play it by it. But then again, having said that, if somebody from outside our circle came in and made one of those same exact jokes to Alfie, I'll be the first one fucking telling them because you if you're friends with somebody, you both sign the same contract. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? You sign up to it, and I've got friends that perhaps don't like that kind of humor. So then you don't engage. You don't do it. You don't do that kind of humor. So judge everyone based on how they it's separate.
Yeah, exactly. Onto the podcast then. I don't really like asking such trivial questions, but have you had a favourite guest? I mean, obviously, Gervais is a big one for you.
Yeah.
But apart from that, anyone that's really surprised you and you thought, wow, maybe I didn't expect that to be such a good episode?
Daniel Sloss, as I mentioned, he's up there. There's been so many more that have impressed me and surprised me than have let me down, if that makes sense. So Peter Blexley's obviously a fan favourite. He was just literally, I only knew him from being the detective on the Channel 4 show Hunted, so I didn't know how many dimensions it'd have to him. His stories are insane. Weirdly, that sounds patronising, but Bazinga was better than I thought he would be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I am somebody that just thinks, well, they're just a side man, aren't they? They're probably just going to remake The Weakest Link or something and do stuff like that. But he came on and he had some insane stories and spoke really well about his own mental health issues and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd probably put Bazinga up there and Weller. Weller was
that was a great one.
I knew I'd like Weller. Mm. I knew I would. He was one of the last kind of UK YouTubers that I ever met. Mm. So people would always say to me on nights out, what's this person like? And I could always tell them. They'd ask me what Weller was like. I was like, I actually don't know. I've never met him. Yeah. But I've known of him for so many years because we was in a little collab channel back in the day. But meeting him, mate, he was sound as. And I think, don't know whether or not he would agree with this, but I think I can't remember somebody that I've met from the YouTube world who I've related to as much and who I've seen myself in as much as him. So yeah, probably Weller, Bazinga, people like that.
That's nice. From an outside point of view, I can see that working between you and Joe because I'm of the perfect age where I've grown up as your two contents have the evolution really of Jackmate and Joe Weller. I'm on the right age for that. I don't know what point I was going to make, but yeah.
Just like the comparison.
Just like the comparison, yeah.
Yeah,
fair. What about the dynamic you've got between you, Stevie, Alfie's involved, Fiona's involved in your work? Was that very natural or did it take time to adjust? Because sometimes working with friends and people close to you can be difficult for a lot of people, but how's it been for you?
Mate, not easy. Not easy. Going from Fiona, obviously used to work at in retail, used to work at a supermarket.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a break for me when she'd go to do her work. I could just be at home and basically do what I want, crack on with my stuff. And then she came on full time. She had to leave her job. So I was like, I was trying to say to her for years, just come and do my stuff. I'll teach you how to edit. Like it's fine. And she didn't think it would work. Her parents, as I say, are traditionalists. So they were obviously a bit hesitant in her doing it. So long story short, something happened with her job where she couldn't go back. She came on. And then I kind of started to debate whether or not I'd done the right thing because we argued a lot and we're not really the kind of couple that do argue, really. We had a few bumps at the start, but I've been with her 5 years now and I'd say the last three were brilliant. We don't argue. But when you work in such a confined space with somebody who you're with when you're not working, when you can't work and play with the same person all the time, because you just end up just being irritated by each other. But it's been half a year now that she's been doing that, and we found what works through trial and error and stuff. At first, she was doing my emails, and that was a nightmare because she'd say, "Oh, why don't you do this brand deal? Like, look, it's decent money. Why don't you do it?" And because I've done it for so many years, I know what works and what doesn't. So I'm just like, no. And she. Quite rightly, she'd be like, "You're turning down this kind of money," but you know what works and what doesn't work. And I've never really been somebody that will just. I'm lucky enough that I'm not in a position where I have to take all of that. So we'd argue a lot about. She'd always think anything I say no to is an opportunity turned down.
Yeah.
Even though you can't just say yes to everything, you'll be spreading yourself too thin. Anyway, trial and error. We found out what works. She now edits Happy Hour full time. She's got it unlocked. Like she knows exactly how to do it now and she's smashing it. So that allows me to do my own thing because she can be at home editing and I can come and do stuff like this and whatnot. So, it's good now, mate. It's good. Yeah. But it takes a lot of work to kind of get that shit going.
You mentioned brand deals there. I've always really admired your approach with it. You're always very open and honest. Sometimes if there's deals that don't fit into your content, quite often you give away money that you get from brand deals. Why do you do that? And why do you think there's a need for that transparency?
It's basically just to save my own back because I'd slag them off for so many years. So to then go and take them, it's like, oh, I'm going to give half of this to charity, guys.
Doing a £1 challenge now.
There's a bit of that. And I think when I used to slag them off back in the day, it was out of jealousy. Yeah. It was like, why am I not getting these brand deals? So obviously when they do come, there is a little bit of like, oh, I'm being a bit of a hypocrite here. I that's the best thing that I have with my channel is the honesty with my audience. Like I've seen a lot of YouTubers kind of fall off a cliff because they portray that honest. I'm Casper Lee. I'm the best guy. I'm just next door. I'm your best, chat to me if you want to, do you know what I mean? Like, you're not that accessible. Like, they almost portray, like, if you're ever feeling down, just give me a DM. And then they'll get 1,000 DMs and 999 are like, why are they not replying? Whereas I'm like, probably don't message me, but yeah. I'm probably not going to reply. Like, I'll try to, I really do. Like, that's probably a bow to my armory, if that's the saying. Like, Fiona will often go through and reply, but I often can't be arsed.
Yeah, so. It explains why I waited weeks for an email. whatever. Don't mention it.
You're over it. But I think a lot of YouTubers basically tried to give this honest approach when they weren't.
Yeah.
So I kind of half-arse it, but I am honest.
And do you think that's probably why you're more comfortable when you meet these people in real life then? Because you haven't got that facade up in front of you. It is just there's normally a divide between your online life and your offline life. But for you, the lines are a bit more blurred than other people.
Yeah, for sure. Like, what you see is what you get with me. Mm-hmm. So if I am to one day meet Alfie Days, I don't give a shit because he's already heard my opinions. He knows what I've got to say, and I'll just say them again to his face. So mm-hmm. it's I'm not really one that is worried by any that at all. I'm very confident in who I am and what I portray online these days. So
that's great. Mm. That's great. Back onto the podcast. You're loving what you're doing now, right?
Mm. Yeah.
That's just all I wanted to say, really. Like, it's really nice. Like I said, I've seen that evolution of Jack, mate.
Mm.
And it's been obvious when you have your heart's not been in it.
Yeah, a lot of people say that as well. Yeah.
But now, I said this the other week on an episode. I fucking love seeing other people do well. For some reason, I get kicks out of it. Right. I don't know. Even if I don't really know you that well, but still seeing other people do well when you know they've put the time and effort in. Mm. I don't know. It just sort of gives a bit of an affirmation there that good things happen to good people.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Yeah. You work hard enough, and I'm a firm believer that you will eventually get the fruits of that labor. And it's nice that you do care, even if you don't know somebody that well, because it shows you're a good person. Like, I know some people in the YouTube space, so I won't name now because it'll cause the fucking load of shit. But I can tell you off camera. But there's some YouTubers who really portray like, oh, it's amazing that you've done this, and they are the most jealous cunts going. Mm. Like, and they don't like to see people succeed.
Yeah,
I'm a firm believer. It's like seeing Chunks and Philly playing soccer aid. I'm like, yes, lads,
mate, that was amazing.
Yeah, do it for the whole YouTube community. Score a hat trick, like, or like Chunks. Even if you're going to miss the penalty, the way he sort of handled himself and conducts it, like, he is amazing. Like, he is smashing it for the whole YouTube community.
Getting them on the pod.
Yeah, I want to get him on the pod. Yeah, Philly unfollowed me the other day though, so not sure if that offer's still open.
Maybe
Philly,
not a YouTuber vibes biting you in the ass.
Yeah, no, he followed me 4 days ago, and then I think because Man U lost 6-1 to Tottenham, and I'm very vocal and loving it when Man U lose, and he's a Man U fan. So I thought at the end of the day, I'll just check if he's still. Oh, he's not. Oh God. The one that got away, but Chunk still is. He's the main one. I'm joking. I love them both.
So you've been doing this for quite a long time now. Mm. Do you reflect on the career you've had quite often, or are you always focused on the next thing?
Oh, mate, I reflect a lot now.
Yeah,
a lot. Because a couple of years ago, the main thing I could reflect on is like, a video about a girl shagging her dog and the Zoella advent calendar. It's like, great. Mm. Whereas now I can look back at my podcast and go, look at this person we've had on. Look at this person. Look at this.
Yeah.
When I go on and I see the thumbnails of all the different people, they're like little trophies for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's so having created that podcast literally a year and a half ago as well, people think that was created years ago.
Yeah.
It's only a year and a half ago. So I have taken a lot of time recently to kind of reflect on where I am. And those little moments where I sit there and I just look, they're kind of like little bits of therapy for me as well, that like just little bits of reassurance that you are doing something right and to keep it up. So yeah, I definitely do reflect, mate.
When you thinking now then, what have been the pinch yourself moments that you look back on?
The first ever video I did with Gervais.
Of course, yeah.
Sitting on that sofa with him, and the first time I made him laugh, it was just like all the validation I ever needed up until that point. And my good friend Tom Norris, Nozza, he'd be the first to admit he's not always one who's quite open with his emotions or praise and stuff like that. And we turned the camera off, Gervais left, and he just looked at me and he just went, fucking hell, mate, give me a hug, you smashed it. And I hugged him and I was like, that's everything now. That's everything. So I'd say that. And then I hate to sound like a broken record, mate, but anytime I'm sat across the podcast table with somebody that I admire and stuff. I mean, Jack Whitehall came on the podcast a few weeks ago and the amount of references he made to my content, I was like, I can't imagine.
I was surprised at how involved in the YouTube world he is. I didn't really know that he was on there. Yeah,
class guy. So again, he's another comedian. Not one that I've watched as much as Gervais, but one I still respect nonetheless. So when he sat there telling me, mate, you could do stand-up tomorrow, I'm like, okay, it's them moments that are like the pinch yourself moments. So I think as soon as anybody you respect and admire shows that kind of same things to you, then that's a real good moment. Yeah. I'd get more starstruck and more nervous meeting somebody I respect than just an A-lister.
Yeah.
Even meeting like Stephen Tries for the first time, like he walks in the room, I'm like, wow, that's Stephen Tries. I love your videos. Whereas if I went and met The Rock, I wouldn't care because it's like I admire the art more than the person.
We were literally saying this, Johnny behind the car on the drive up here. We were saying how, I don't care about like people if they're famous or not. Like it doesn't make a difference to me if I like their stuff. And if we like their stuff, then it's just it means so much more.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less.
100%.
Could not care less.
100%. And most of the A-listers that I've met, not to sound a bit wanky most of the A-listers, but I have met a few, and most of them have been wankers.
Yeah.
Like they've just been so up themselves and not great people. Whereas you meet YouTubers like Stephen Tries and. Mainly just Stephen Tries, and they turn out to be nice lads. So,
Okay, we've touched on a lot of topics here in quite a quick amount of time, actually. I always like to finish this podcast with long ball questions. So no more ticker tacker. They're going to be straight and direct to the point. Sam Allardyce questions, as Chris Vree put it. So it's been a mad year in many aspects, but what have you learnt about yourself?
Oh, God. What have I learnt about myself? That when I put my mind something to it can really succeed with the podcast, and that I don't really care about YouTube drama.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be the two things. I don't give a shit. I feel like you want a longer answer.
No, that's fine. No, I'll take that. For you, what's the best thing and the worst thing about being a YouTuber? Or maybe we'll do that about a podcaster now. Like I class you more as a podcaster now than I do.
Okay, well, I think that's two very different answers.
Okay, still want to do both.
So the best thing and the worst thing about being a YouTuber is, and do you mean like a full-time YouTuber or just a YouTuber in general?
Your position as a YouTuber.
The best thing about it is it's the same answer. So the best thing about it is that I can do what I want when I want. Mm-hmm. And the reason that that's also the worst thing about it is when you don't put the hours in, you don't get the rewards out. Mm-hmm. If I don't upload, I used to think I had a job at Bella Italia for about 9-10 months, and I weren't a huge fan of it. And I'm when it comes to like normal jobs, I'm very lazy. So I take the approach that a lot of people think. I've met a lot of YouTubers who are like, I'm a YouTuber, I can do what I want. Look at these people having to go and do this job that I would never do. Whereas I'm like, thank fuck that you want to do these jobs, or there are people that do these jobs, because I'm so lucky. It makes me feel even luckier about what I have. Do you know what I mean? Like I see my dad get up and at fucking 4:30 in the morning every morning go to a factory. There's not one part of me that's like, oh, that means I'm above him.
Yeah.
That's like he's above me because he's got the fucking work ethic to. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
To go out and do that. So, I'm so lucky that sometimes I won't wake up till like 11 in the morning. Mm. Like, and I'm a 27-year-old man. I get up when I want, do what I want. But on the other side of the table, like if I don't upload for 2 weeks, that's when you start to feel the dread. Like I'm going to be irrelevant. I've not uploaded. I need to keep it up. So you need to kind of find that work-life balance, and that's hard to do sometimes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because you're not going to get that in most other jobs.
Yeah,
is that something that's caused you a lot of trouble in the past?
100%. I was speaking to my mate the other day. I wouldn't ever say that being a YouTuber is comparable to something like my dad's job at all. And I can tell you the negative sides of it now, but I don't want to run the risk of going, woe is me, because it's an amazing job. And, and I'd encourage anybody out there that wants to do it, give it a crack of the whip, because if you succeed, you live a life of luxury. And I owe everything to YouTube. But there are negatives, like any job. So sometimes my mates will go, and like my mate Joel will go do a 9-to-5. Then he'll ask me to come to the pub, and I'll go to the pub. And there's only one of us in that room that's feeling guilty for being at the pub then, because he's been and done it. I can always do more because my work is just at home and I get out what I put in. So I always feel like when I'm not working, I feel shit about myself, when shouldn't always feel like that. Yeah. You don't know when you've done enough, really. Yeah. But overall, the positives obviously outweigh the negatives.
What about being a podcaster then?
What, the best and worst things?
Yeah.
There's not really many negatives. I guess one of the only negatives I can think of is because you speak so frequently for such long periods of time, mm-hmm. you're bound to say things that will come back to bite you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird because you get in the heat of the moment and sometimes you say things that you perhaps might not believe. And mm-hmm. that's not to try and deceive anyone.
No, yeah,
it's
I know
just speaking for, I speak for, sometimes we'll go to a happy hour studio on a Thursday and we film 3 or 4 episodes, 2 hours long. It's 8 hours speaking. I'm bound to say something in that 8 hours where I go home and go, see, why did I say that? Mm. Or, for example, we had Kavos on, who splits opinion like no other in the YouTube community. And you leave and you think, I probably should have said this. I probably didn't say that. Did I agree to the wrong thing? Yeah. Are people? So I guess it's just when you're a podcaster, there's not much to be edited out. So you can easily be misconstrued and easily be cancelled, I guess. Well, yeah. Not easily be cancelled because it doesn't exist. But And the best thing about being a podcaster is just the people you get to meet and the stories you get to hear. Because sometimes, mate, when the right guest is on and I'm hearing their stories, 2 hours feels like 10 minutes because you are just so...
Mate, this has felt like 10 minutes to me. I don't actually know how long we've been rolling.
Yeah, it's felt like about 5 months for me.
Well, arrogant. Yeah, I was saying that to a friend actually the other day that he said that Joe Rogan like, always contradicts himself and he's not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of Joe Rogan, but that's not the reason. Mm-hmm. Because I said to him, if you recorded a 3-hour conversation with your friend and did that all the time, you're going to contradict yourself so much, so often. It's just natural.
Yeah,
I've said things in this episode that I don't remember saying.
Right, yeah,
just because,
sure.
like you said, in the heat of the moment. But
normally, when
everyone.
You have these conversations with people day to day, they're gone. They're just out there. Exactly. And then they're gone.
Especially for you, because you're like subhuman scum. Just scum. Look at them.
I've already forgot.
What about in your life? What 3 things are most important to you?
My partner, Fiona, love her to bits, absolute diamond, does so much for me. Mm-hmm. Family. And I'm going to put family and friends in the same one. So it gives me another option. Well, I guess Fiona's in that as well. Isn't she? Family and friends.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We'll put them together.
Yeah. So I've got 2 more. I'd say
popcorn and Evian water.
Asking celebrities their favorite meal deal. Family, friends, partner, all of that stuff. Second one would be finding a career that you love, and then you never have to work again, do you? If you've got a job that you love, and then third, I would say this is going to sound a bit cliche, but just having a good time.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. Yeah, people often forget to do things they enjoy.
Yeah. I will work very hard between Monday and Friday, and come Saturday, I'm just down the pub and I don't give a shit. I'm watching the football and I'm drinking and I'm going to feel like shit on the Sunday. Mm-hmm. But as long as you get that Monday to Friday done, you should be allowed that Saturday.
Yeah. What about guidance that you'd give to a 16-year-old Jack?
It's weird because obviously looking back on the old videos where I'd probably go a bit too far at people, I'd probably be tempted to say, don't do that, think more about it. But then that's made me learn right from wrong.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I didn't do that, I might still be calling them all the names under the sun now for doing very little wrong. Yeah. So I actually wouldn't change much. I'd probably just say, do exactly what you're going to do, but worry less about it succeeding.
Yeah.
Because I spend every other day worrying that you, I don't know about you, but like being a creator, you feel like that tomorrow is going to be up, like your time's going to be up. Like I always think, oh, this YouTube paycheck could be my last one because YouTube could go tomorrow, but ultimately, is it really? And if you keep doing what you're passionate about and putting the energy in, you're going to get stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably just say worry less.
Yeah. What about what makes you sad?
Health anxiety.
Fair enough. Yeah.
West Ham losing. Mm-hmm. West Ham losing's a weird one, isn't it? Because
quite often. lads.
That has no effect on, like, do you get this? Like when your football team loses and it fucks up your whole weekend, and then
I've detached myself from Arsenal a bit more now because of that reason. Like I don't put all my happiness eggs in that basket.
Right, yeah, because it doesn't really make a difference, does it? But it does. It's like, it's football's kind of like a bit like religion in that respect, isn't it? So yeah, West Ham losing and seeing my friends and family unhappy, really.
Yeah, love that. Other end of the spectrum, final question of the day, what is happiness to you?
Oh God, happiness, mate. Like I just touched on a minute there. Happiness is finding a job you love to do so you never have to work again.
Incredible. There we go. Jackmate 2020.
There we go.
You said that there. Okay, people, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for joining me on the Football and Feelings podcast. I'd say subscribe to Jack, but no, subscribe to me, please. He's got too many subs. Come on, get involved over here. Yeah, Jack, thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a pleasure, Liam. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thanks. Take it easy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.